It's a trap!
Welcome to episode number 127 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. I'm Tim Dugan, and Carson is absent this week. He's over celebrating his brother's wedding. So in his stead, we have a returning guest host here. John McDermott's back. Thanks for coming back, John.
Yeah, thanks, Tim.
So we've got some pretty exciting news going on right now. We do have the initial release of X-Wing 2nd Edition happening at Gen Con this week. So when this episode posts on Wednesday, tomorrow we will be seeing an early release of the 2nd Edition game at Gen Con. So if you're going to be at the convention, hopefully you're going to be lining up at the Fantasy Flight booth to start picking up your 2nd Edition content. Today we're going to chat about some other news that came out. Fantasy Flight released the initial point lists for all the pilots and upgrade cards coming in the first wave of 2nd Edition. They've confirmed that the app isn't actually going to be officially released till September 13th, but in the meantime we can already start our squad building here in a little less convenient way. So for today's episode, without getting into too much detail, we're going to talk about some of the design points we've been able to see now that we know the point costs for these ships, and talk about what that means for 2nd Edition X-Wing. So before we dive too deep here into what we're going to talk about today, I did want to clarify a couple points here. As much as I'm sure you guys would love us to read off every point value from the squad list, I think you guys are more than capable of doing that yourself. So you might hear us throw out some numbers from time to time. We're mostly going to talk a little bit about point differences and then maybe a point cost if it's really significant. But don't worry, we're not going to bore you just going down the list and talking about every point value of every pilot.
So one of the first things to note when we're going over the new point costs and point lists that were announced by Fantasy Flight Games is that in 2nd Edition, X-Wing will be moving to a new 200-point format.
So basically what that means is the game, like the squad sizes aren't essentially changing. Basically what they've done is they've doubled the scale so that there's more granularity and more movement space for when they're costing ships and upgrade cards. So for instance, in 1st Edition X-Wing, a TIE Fighter, which was for a long time your cheapest available ship option, was 12 points. Now going into the 2nd Edition, we see that value just about double. So you're going to be fitting squads of about the same number of ships from time to time. You're still going to have that basically that same range of ships from about 2 to 8. But now that we have a wider scale there, they have a lot more room in point costing to kind of get precise value, which was becoming a problem, I think, in 1st Edition X-Wing, particularly for upgrade cards.
And what that 200-point scale does, too, is it brings a new element to tournament play where all ships will now be worth half points if you get that corresponding damage on them. Instead of only large base ships being worth half points, now it's across the board the same for everything.
Yeah, and that's going to help, you know, kind of reduce some of the problems we saw in the 1st Edition where small base ships that could hold on to a lot of points and be very defensible were just really hard to kill late game. So you do a bunch of damage and then end up not really getting any value out of it as a tournament player. So that was a cool change to see. But I think moving to the 200-point scale is really significant, though, for upgrade cards, where sometimes you kind of needed there to be in-between values in 1st Edition, where the difference between an upgrade card being 3 or 4 points would be really significant, right? Like, that'd be a significant jump up or down, because by the time we're building those lists, we're getting down to we only have, you know, 1 or 2 points to play with. So just changing those upgrade values a little bit. Basically, what we're seeing in 2nd Edition is they can kind of do half-point values, right? Where a card that costs 3 points in 1st Edition now could either cost a little bit cheaper at about 2.5 points or a little bit more at 3.5 points, basically by doubling that scale. So it would be either 5 points or 7 points, respectively.
So a good example of an upgrade that was shifted due to the 200-point scale is the Talent Swarm Tactics. So in 1st Edition, it was 2 points, and at the start of combat phase, you could choose one friendly ship at range one. You could make that ship your pilot skill until the end of the round. In 2nd Edition, Swarm Tactics is now 3 points to adjust for that 200-point switch.
Right, so basically it was a 2-point card in 1st Edition. The point scale doubled, so if it had it stayed the same, it would be worth 4 points in 2nd Edition. But now you kind of get that half value. So you can have it be 3 points in 2nd Edition, which is only like 150% of what it would be in 1st Edition. At the same time, we do see it go to the cheaper end too, a card like Crackshot, which does essentially the same thing. It's a single-use card that cancels an evade result. In first edition, it cost 1 point. In second edition, it still costs 1 point, but thanks to that 200-point scale, that's actually only half of what its value was relative to the point scale in the first edition of the game. So we do see that granularity there, which gives the developers more room to get more accurate point values for what these cards are worth. Now, it remains to be seen if these point values are going to be accurate. Thankfully, over time, the developers can adjust those point values. Thanks to most of the squad building being done in an app, we're not going to be stuck to these lists forever. So that's one nice point about the 200-point scale. Now, it's going to be a little hard for us veteran X-Wing players to get used to the idea of that double-point scale. Every time I look at these numbers, in my mind, I kind of mentally cut them in half just so I can figure out what they were relative to first edition values, but I think over time we'll just kind of get used to that and get used to the actual 200-point scale numbers. But diving into the actual content here, I guess if you want to hear us read off every point value, I can ask Carson to record a special episode where he just goes down the list and reads all the names. I'm sure he'd be happy to do that on his own. But in the meantime, let's talk about some interesting design points here now that we know some point values. So I think it's good to start with looking at the cheapest ships available and basically what are going to be those bulk starfighters that you're going to fly in mass in your squads. So mostly I want to talk about right away the TIE LN fighter, the basic TIE fighter, and the Z95 headhunter.
Yeah, so in first edition, these ships were both 12 points apiece. Now, in second edition, they're 23 points apiece, so they're just slightly cheaper than doubling their point cost in second edition.
Which I think is really cool. It doesn't mean you can actually, I think, fly any more of them in a squad, but it does create a cool opportunity there where we actually see these ships becoming cheaper than they were in the first edition, which I never thought we'd see ships cheaper than that 12-point minimum in first edition, but these just come in percentage-wise a little bit lower. So that was a cool factor to see. Obviously, we could see these values even be more adjusted over time. They could go potentially even lower if ships like this fall out of popularity. I think they're probably okay where they are for now, at least in that first wave. So I expect them to stay at this value for a while. We did find out that there are actually ships cheaper now than the TIE LN or the Z95 Headhunter, though they have some pretty huge asterisks next to them. That awesome autopilot drone, which we talked about when we were discussing the Lando's Millennium Falcon expansion. It's basically a escape craft that can dock onto Lando's Millennium Falcon, and after 3 turns of not being docked, it'll explode and deal out critical damage.
So for 12 points, you're getting 2 extra shields on your Falcon, and then you're getting a bomb that you can maneuver.
Right, so it doesn't quite function like a normal ship would, but it is notable that as far as I can tell, you could run this as a standalone ship, set it up like any other ship. It doesn't have to start docked, and then just send it straight out into the battlefield. It'll blow up eventually, but it's the cheapest way you can get that ship out on the board. We also still have the Nashta Pup, which can dock onto a YV-666 sporting the Houndstooth title. This is, I guess, technically the cheapest ship you could run. The Nashta Pup is only 6 points, but it does require that a YV-666 in your squad has that Houndstooth title for 1 point. And you can't deploy it until your ship blows up, so it's a little bit of a caveat there. I think, realistically, the cheapest ship you can still run in the squad is a Z95 or a TIE LN. But we don't want to talk about TIE fighters and Z95s all day. Let's move on to another interesting thing I saw here. One thing that's really cool that we saw on this list is that upgrade cards can have varying point costs, depending on a couple different factors. We've seen some that are size-based, and we've seen some that are agility value-based.
And what's really cool about that sliding scale is it's not limited to a particular type of upgrade. For example, for small, medium, and large base ships, we have engine upgrade, which is a modification, and we also have expert handling, which is a talent. And they operate a little bit differently now as well. So, for example, engine upgrade requires you to have the red boost action, and in turn will make your red boost action white. It does not give you the boost action.
And we see that it has a sliding point scale here depending on if your ship's small, medium, or large base. So basically, small ships pay 3 points for this, medium bases pay 6, and large bases pay 9. And actually having that scale, that's something we could have used in first edition X-Wing with engine upgrade back then, which back then it was even better, just added the boost action to a ship that didn't have the boost action. But we can see here by using this sliding point scale and differentiating between different size ships, we can acknowledge that ships use boost differently, right? So a small base ship taking a boost, which either does the straight template or the bank template, same size regardless of the base of the ship, It's not as valuable to change a red boost into a white boost. That's still good, right? Like, turning a red action into a white action is great. But on a small base ship, probably a cheaper ship, not such a big deal. But when you go to the other end of the spectrum, and we're talking about, like, the Millennium Falcon with that native red boost, which we know boosts on large bases are already going to be rare enough, changing that into a white action is incredibly valuable. So we see the relative sliding point scale here acknowledges that and says, since it's so much more valuable for a large base ship to have a white boost over a red boost, the point value increases relative to that. So you're going to pay substantially more, three times as much for a large base converting the boost than you would for a small base.
And the same thing goes for some of those other modifications as well. For example, hull upgrade and shield upgrade. Those are on a sliding scale based on the ship that you're equipping it on's agility value. So stealth device, which is also included on that sliding scale, costs more if your agility value is higher. So a ship that has an agility value of 3, stealth device is going to be more valuable to that ship than it would be to a ship with an
agility value of 0. Yeah, and we saw that in first edition too, right? Like, stealth device back in first edition points cost 3 points, which is a hefty amount to pay for an upgrade card. And it really wasn't something you were going to put on anything with even less than 3 agility, right? 1 or 2 agility. As soon as you got hit by an attack, you'd have to discard it and you'd lose that agility bonus. But we saw it was super valuable on a ship with high agility, like Soontir Fel, going from 3 agility dice to 4 agility dice plus all those evade modifications. You're really going to make it much easier for you to avoid attacks altogether, which you need to do to keep that stealth device. In second edition, we see stealth device do essentially the same thing. It gives you an extra agility die until you take damage and have to discard it. But now you have some options where you can run it on lower agility ships. So if you want to give your 0 agility ship 1 agility die, I still don't know if that's terribly valuable, but it only costs you 3 points. So you can get an agility die for at least 1 round. Maybe you have some trick you can use. But as we look at those middling agility values like 1 or 2, suddenly, since it's a little bit cheaper, that stealth device might be a better option. Like, going from 1 to 2 agility dice, if you're going to have some focus mods, might actually prevent some damage early on. And it's only 4 points, right? So I think there's the potential there that this could be valuable over time. I personally still maybe don't quite see that, but I like to see that it's relative, right? And then you're not just getting a super cost-efficient upgrade card for those high agility ships. You have to pay a decent amount to get that extra agility die.
And it really reflects the value of it, too, in that there are not as many opportunities to modify your dice anymore. So there's not a lot of token stacking, and auto thrusters is gone. So the value of a card like Stealth Device is increased quite a bit in second edition.
And, I mean, overall, we talk about this just because I like the ability to adjust based on these different metrics of a ship, right? Agility value, ship size. You can do a bunch of different stuff here to have that sliding point scale. I could see, right, even in the future, you could do it based on unique pilot versus not unique pilot, right? There's so many different ways you can measure things so that you can have these really cool upgrade cards, but they aren't going to be broken right out of the gate, right? They can adapt depending on what platforms they're going on. And I could, like, you could see this in the future, right? If we have one of these other upgrade cards we already know about, if that proves to be too good on a certain class of ship, suddenly we can have a sliding scale so that it costs different amounts depending on what ship it's on, just to keep it in the game without ruining the game.
Right. And a good example of that would be the special attack cards that we have now, which in first edition were your secondary weapons. If a particular chassis is too effective with a special attack at the cost that it's already at, they can adjust that. So if a ship that has a higher attack value, you know, is doing too good with, let's just say, a proton torpedo, that proton torpedo can be put on that sliding scale to reflect that efficiency for that ship.
And I think that's just a really cool design space to go into, and I think it's going to lend itself to a more healthy competitive game, and that's really important to players like you and me, John, right? Because we really want this game to stay healthy competitively, and we don't want to see the same mistakes that happened in first edition where we'd see just the same set of upgrade cards dominate a metagame for months at a time. They're going to be able to react more actively and balance things out, hopefully, so that we can have a healthy game with, you know, a fair bit of diversity amongst pilots and upgrade cards. So, John, one thing you pointed out to me while we were preparing for today's show is some ships with high initiative values actually come in a little bit cheaper than ships in the same chassis with lower initiative values. I thought this was an interesting point, so we were kind of digging in a little bit to look at why that is.
Yeah, so the particular example that really caught my eye when I was looking at these point cost lists were the TIE Striker. So looking at it, you notice that currently in first edition, Duchess is the highest initiative striker at pilot skill 8. And then you have Pierre Sabacc at pilot skill 6 and Countdown at pilot skill 5. What's interesting is in second edition, Duchess stays at Initiative 5. However, she costs less than Countdown and Pierre Sabacc based on her ability.
Right, so in first edition, they actually, the point values tiered up based on their pilot skill back then. So the 5 and 6 ones cost a little bit less, and then the pilot skill 8 cost a little bit more. Now that we've seen those initiative values narrow, even though Duchess is still the highest initiative value, the ships with lower initiative values but arguably better pilot abilities actually cost a little bit more. And this is a design space that I always thought X-Wing could explore more, because a lot of the early ship designs were very linear, right? Like, they kind of had, like, okay, the pilot skills would go up progressively, and for the most part, the pilot abilities would get better the higher the pilot skill was. And I think that's less interesting for list building. I like it better when it's like this, where you have to make that decision, okay, do I go with the higher initiative pilot so I can activate later and shoot later, but take a maybe lesser pilot ability, or do I choose the lower initiative value and choose a more interesting or more powerful pilot ability, but at the cost of having that lower activation number?
It really does reflect an insight into competitive play, you know, taking that initiative bump or decrease or whatever it is you want to do in order to favor those abilities that you're paying for.
And we're seeing this across the board too. Like, and it's not just for good pilot abilities. A lot of the ships that have force ratings, which we've all been expecting to be a very powerful mechanic, ships with force ratings tend to cost more than ships on the same platform that have higher initiative values. So we've seen instances like Luke's at initiative 5 compared to Wedge, who's at initiative 6. But in the X-Wing, Luke costs substantially more, 10 points more. We also see that with Asajj Ventress and Ketsu Onyo. Asajj has got the force rating and the lower initiative, but costs more than the higher initiative Ketsu.
And that brings up an interesting point, too, is how the force users cost significantly more than some of their other counterparts.
Yeah, this is something we talked about on the show in anticipation of second edition, because even me and Carson could see, and I think a lot of X-Wing players could see, the inherent value of having those force ratings. Now that action efficiency is way lower, it's a lot harder for ship to get multiple actions. And when they do have things like linked actions, they're usually very specific. You don't have those catch-all upgrade cards like Push the Limit, which lets you get any two actions you want. So it was really obvious that force ratings would be significant, but at the same time, we knew they would probably have to cost a fair bit more to compensate for how good those force ratings are. And we see that reflected, you know, looking at these point lists now. You've got instances where, you know, Kanan Jarrus with a force rating costs 14 points more than Harrison Dula, which is the next closest point cost VCX 100. Like I said, Asajj Ventress costs more than Ketsu Onyo, thanks to that force rating.
And then you've got Darth Vader, who costs 20 points more than Merrick Stille.
Yeah, that's absolutely huge. So clearly, it looks like the value of force ratings is not lost on the developers of the game, which is great to know. I'm interested to see how this works out for competitive play, right? We're going to get our hands on these ships this week, or at least I am. I get to go to Gen Con. But it's going to be interesting to see in competitive play how, if that point difference is correct, right? Like, it could be true that maybe they're a little too expensive and running more generic ships or non-force rated ships is more long-term value. But at the same time, maybe the force ratings are just so good that this disparity might not even be enough, right?
Well, and part of that point cost might be reflected in the fact that they only have 4 options to choose from talent slots. So force users can only take force talents, and there are only 4 of them. So they have a much more limited pool of options as far as that upgrade slot goes. And that could be reflected here in this point value.
That is an absolutely great point, too. Like, yeah, just having that narrow selection of 4 options, most of them are pretty good, but you have, I mean, you know, a couple dozen options with regards to just the plain old talent slot, and so far we haven't seen any pilot that has access to both a force talent and a pilot talent. So that's a good point to bring up, and I wonder if that will impact it here, right? I feel like Darth Vader's got enough good options, and just having that force rating of 3, he seems pretty playable right now, but I wonder how it'll impact the other force users.
Because with those force ratings, no matter what you do or how many you spend in a turn, you're always going to start your next turn with at least 1 force charge.
One area I'm actually kind of disappointed, as a person who really does enjoy flying X-Wings and is really excited about all the upgrades that have been made to X-Wings, is that they kind of spoiled us with the Renegade refit, which reduced the point cost of X-Wings by 2, and they still got an extra mod slot, and it enabled you to fly 5 X-Wings. I was really hoping we'd still get to put 5 X-Wings on the board in 2nd edition, but it looks like they're just a little too good with all their improvements, and they cost 41 points, which means we're just 5 points over on that 200-point scale from being able to run 5 generic X-Wings. So I'm a little bit sad about that.
However, Tim, while you may not be able to get 5 X-Wings, you can get 5 Kirax fighters.
Right. So they kind of kept that as a feature of the Kiraz, where like that was like the first time you could run 5 things that were kind of close to power level of X-Wings in a list. 5 hit points back in first edition, 20 points though each. It's cool to see that coming in again. I don't know if that's going to be any good. It doesn't look like we have any cheap ways of getting mods on there, even with their 3 mod slots. But yeah, that's like other. It looks like if you're going to go for a ship spam, you're probably going to be running something more like Z95s or TIE fighters.
And just at face value, it looks like in regards to any sort of generic 4 is going to be a pretty good number, because you get 4 ships and you'll get maybe an upgrade for sure on each one, maybe 2 depending on which ones you're taking.
Yeah, looking at a lot of the new point costs, though, at 41 points, you could probably kit out those X-Wings pretty good, or have like one decently kitted out X-Wing. You've got some cool options.
Or for all you Imperial players out there, you could take 5 Inquisitors, so you get that Force Charge reoccurring each turn.
Yeah, I'm pretty psyched about the TIE Advanced prototype. I'm all ready to run the Grand Inquisitor and some generics. It's going to be a good time. Oh, I think this is a good point to talk about one area where we were definitely wrong on this podcast, and I think the threat cards definitely threw off a lot of us in the X-Wing community. Now that we know not only point costs, but what the upgrade slots are going to be on all these ships, as it turns out, those threat cards that we were seeing in spoiler articles did not necessarily reflect the actual slots on each of these ships.
Right, so for example, the Fen Rao threat card indicates that the ship has 2 modification slots. And in this document that was released by Fantasy Flight, we see that none of the Fang fighters have any modification slots.
Which is cool, actually, kind of on its own. I've been very intrigued by the threat cards. I think it's a great way to introduce new people to the game, right? You've got these pre-built ships that they can fly. And we've even been talking about stuff like a threat card drafting format. I know that's been floating out there. That sounds really cool to me. It is interesting that they've balanced those threat cards completely differently, apparently, than what they do for tournament play, where they can take upgrade cards that the ship can't normally even have. Kind of puts a new perspective on what the threat cards mean, and kind of ruins, I think, spoiler articles for me in the future, because if Fantasy Flight's going to continue not to give us point values whenever they announce new ship expansions, we cannot trust these threat cards to give us accurate ideas of what kind of upgrade slots the ships are actually going to have.
I was super excited for Fen Rao with afterburners and stealth device, and now that dream has just been crushed in front of my eyes.
I think Fen's still going to be pretty cool to run, though. I'm still excited.
One of the things I noticed, too, when going over this list is particularly about the talent upgrades. It seems like most of them, for the exception of maybe expert handling, all modify dice in some way, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, either you're re-rolling dice or adding more dice or preventing your opponent from rolling dice or removing dice from their dice pool. I think that is cool that they generally have a kind of consistent design philosophy. It like seems so far. It seemed like in first edition that the elite pilot talent slot just became kind of the catch-all slot for abilities that weren't equipment specific, right? Like it's kind of easy to see why a cannon upgrade slot's always going to perform an attack or something like that. The elite pilot talent slot in first edition just seemed kind of like whatever ability we want to try out on an upgrade card, let's put that in that slot, which had its merits, but most of the time we were running just the same talent cards all the time. It's cool to see that they, for the most part, modify dice in different ways, and that there's a nice diversity, right? So like it's strategy based, so you can choose cards like Outmaneuver, which focuses more on catching your opponent in your firing arc while not landing in their firing arc. Or you can just go for things like Predator, which emphasize having that bullseye firing arc. So many cool options here. And it is cool to see that they all kind of have that dice modification, which I think is going to be pretty necessary in second edition. Since we're not going to be able to as easily stack multiple actions in a single round, being able to get that dice modification from the talent slot, I think, is going to be really important.
And another cool thing about these talent upgrades is seeing them reference the bullseye firing arc more. Now every ship has the bullseye firing arc printed on its base, even though it doesn't necessarily inherently do anything. But for example, marksmanship, when you have your opponent in your bullseye firing arc, you can actually change one hit to a critical result.
And as a quick aside, I do want to bring up that this document did confirm a combo here that I'm really excited about. Saint Mara in the TIE Fighter, whose ability is, while you perform an attack, you may spend one critical result. If you do, deal one face-down damage card to the defender, then cancel your remaining results. We knew this card was coming when we were talking about TIE Fighters, and I brought up, if this card has a talent slot, then you can throw marksmanship on there for just 1 point. And if you get people inside your bullseye firing arc, as long as you can attack and roll at least one hit, that guarantees a face down damage card. And thankfully, Saint Mara does have that talent slot. So I feel like we're going to be seeing a lot of Saint Maras out there with marksmanship, which sounds like a pretty fun combo. Does put a lot of stress on you, though, to try and land that bullseye firing arc.
But for 31 points, that's an extremely effective chassis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you start to hit those ships with really low hull values, and you're going to be popping them off the board before their shields are even down. I think the last thing we should touch on today, too, is that a lot of the concerns that at least I've had, and I know a lot of X-Wing players have had, about the broken stuff or the abilities that seem too good, it looks like those are costed pretty fairly. So I know right off the bat, people were worried about TIE Defenders. I thought they were looking pretty good. They have access to all standard actions, and then when they perform a 3, 4, or 5 speed maneuver, they can take a free evade action. And on top of that, they have an extra shield. So now they're 3 attack dice, 3 agility, 3 hull, and a 4 shield. So these things were looking to be crazy powerful. It looks like they're going to be costed to reflect that. You know, the named pilots are coming in 84, 86, 88 points, and even the generics are in the 70s there, so you're not going to be able to run more than 2 TIE Defenders in a 200-point list. So it's good to see them reel that value in.
It's also just crazy to think that we could see games with just 2 TIE Defenders in a list.
Right, but I think that's the way you'd have to run them, right? Like, you just load them out with upgrade cards and just run into the fight. Kind of like how people would run Dual Aggressors back in First Edition, right? Which, that's still a fine strategy in Scum and Villainy, but now we kind of have the Imperial equivalent. We also saw some other, you know, quote-unquote broken abilities or really powerful abilities come in at crazy expensive point costs. The Luke Skywalker crew, which gives you a force rating and lets you move your mobile firing arcs after your opponents have moved, that comes in at a whopping 30 points for an upgrade card, which is crazy expensive. You can get some decent ships for that point cost.
And for those of you that may have been worried about seeing this crew card on everyone's favorite ship, Dash Rendar, Dash comes in at a 100 points base. So right there, you have 130 points base, which is over half your list sunk into 2 cards.
Right, and then you still have to do, presumably, other upgrade cards on top of that. That doesn't leave much for ships to accompany it. So right now, from a competitive angle, I could be proven wrong, but it looks like this is probably not going to be a super problematic ship there. It's still got a finite number of hit points, and you know, if you have a decent amount of ships on the board, even if Dash is dealing out a lot of damage, you can deal out a fair bit of damage to Dash with how all the, you know, agility modifying abilities have really been toned down. Other cards that were looking to be a little problematic, Supernatural Reflexes, which lets you get a booster barrel roll before you moved. That's coming in at 12 points, and that's force only, though, so it's already a finite number of ships that can run it, and it's on the more expensive end of upgrade cards.
And again, we talked before about how the point cost can really reflect the value of that particular upgrade on a particular ship. So 12 points to a force user to have advanced sensors, booster barrel roll, you know, could be very good. But for example, if you threw that on Darth Vader, you're at 82 points without any other upgrades, and that's really expensive.
Yeah, you're putting a lot of investment into a single ship, and that ship can get destroyed or lose half points now, regardless of what size it is. So there's not too much concern there. I think the last area of concern, too, was X-Wing 2nd Edition just going to turn into a Proton Torpedoes game? They are a fairly expensive piece of ordnance. A lot of ordnance is actually relatively cost-effective. Proton Torpedo is a really good torpedo. You get 2 charges on there. You don't have to spend the target lock. You don't really have to do that with any missiles or torpedoes in 2nd edition. And you can change a hit into a crit. But it does cost a little bit more than it did in 1st edition. It's coming in at 9 points, which if you're in old 1st edition speak, that'd be about 4.5 points. So it's a good piece of ordnance. It's on the more expensive end. So I think that'll help reel in how potentially problematic it could be. And of course, you know, if that card becomes an issue, bump that point cost up to 12 or whatnot, and suddenly it's not such a problem anymore. So glad to see that these, you know, potentially problematic cards look like they've been addressed so far. And then, you know, if there's a problem, hopefully we can get some quick response to adjust those point values accordingly.
Overall, I'd have to say I'm pretty comfortable with where everything has been released at this point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, looking at the point values, a lot of things are pretty close to what they were relative in first edition, right? Like, the point values are pretty close in some instances, percentage-wise, the pilots are exactly the same. In point cost, we've just seen their abilities tweaked a little bit. So I feel like in first edition, maybe they were pretty close to the mark, but just not being able to adjust abilities or adjust point scores, they were like close, but not quite there. So thankfully, I'm very excited about second edition. We've got ships releasing this week at Gen Con, the official release coming in September 13th. John, are you still excited about this game? Have your thoughts changed at all now that you've seen these point costs?
I'm more excited than ever, I think, for second edition. And part of that is the fact that I cannot go to Gen Con. So we're going to be seeing people coming back next week with their new second edition cool stuff. And those of us that aren't going still have to wait another 5 weeks or so before we can get our hands on the stuff. And that enough is enough to get me hyped up for that September 13th release.
Well, it's good to hear. I'm glad you're still excited. And hopefully, I'm hoping to get my hands on some X-Wing 2nd Edition stuff at Gen Con. I think I can share for a month so we can all get to play around with the new stuff until that official release on September 13th. It does seem like it's time to close out the show, though. So, John, I'd like to say thank you for coming on the show and filling in for Carson this week.
Yeah, no problem, Tim. I appreciate you welcoming me back.
And I will be at Gen Con this week. If any Radio TCX listeners are there and you see me, be sure to come up and say hi. I'd love to chat with you guys about X-Wing or board games or whatever. Hopefully I'll be donning my Radio TCX shirt most of the time there when I'm not demoing games. But yeah, if you see me at Gen Con, be sure to come up and say hi. We'd love to talk to you guys. Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast. And if you really enjoy the show, please go onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and what other people would be interested in listening. If you want to support the show directly, you can go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show financially. We're actually working on some new Patreon rewards here to kind of revise our lineup here. So hopefully we'll have some announcements regarding that in the next couple weeks in anticipation of this big second edition launch. In the meantime, thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast, and we'll talk to you next week, hopefully with some cool Gen Con news. It's a